Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anazal Ministries podcast.
Should the thing be CGI or have practical effects? This is Systematic Geekology. We are the priest of the geeks. I am one of your geekologists, Kevin Schaefer, joined by one of my favorite co-hosts, Evan Garcia. Evan, how are you today?
I'm feeling fantastic. How about you?
Ah, good. Like, very appropriate there. Yes, if you couldn't tell from the first line, our little intro question, and from that little pun there from Evan. First off, this is part of our Rotten Films Summer Drive-In series, and we'll talk about that series in just a sec, but with the upcoming Fantastic Four movie from the MCU hitting theaters in July, we wanted to revisit the 2005 classic Fantastic Four, directed by Tim Story. So we're doing a part of the series, and just a little bit of an overview about what this series is. So our summer drive-in series we've done in the past, where we just do kind of short revisits of anything from classic movies to summer blockbusters to, and in this case, we're doing a Rotten Film series in which we're looking at movies that have a 30% or less score on Rotten Tomatoes and looking at the, how, you know, does it deserve that score? Is the movie, you know, perhaps better than we remember? We're going to look at all those things. And so I'm very excited to get into this. And and if you want to check out the other episodes in this series, check out the show notes for a playlist where you can find the whole series here. So Evan, let's jump right in. We're very excited. So let me just ask you, thinking about this movie, 2005 Fantastic Four, if we had just left the drive-in, seeing this for the first time, what would be your first reaction or first thing you would say? So, and try to put it in the context of it's 2005. We're just leaving the drive-in theater. We've just seen this movie. What are your thoughts?
I would get out of the movie theater, walk over, find the nearest payphone, and call collect to my mom and say, come pick me up because I need to erase this film from my memory.
Brutal, but I love it. I love the description, not just like, oh, that was pretty bad. I love how you describe it as this is an emergency. And
this is an emergency,
right,
Bob, help. Because I was in high school when this came out. I was a junior, senior. So
yeah. Man, you know, my relation to this movie, I do have a very specific angle with it because I was in middle school, or no, not even middle school. It was the summer between elementary and middle school. And when this movie came out, I was having a severe spinal surgery that summer. And so I remember the anticipation for the movie. Like, I had seen Fantastic Four in the magazines, and I think I knew the characters from the cartoons. And so I got all the action figures. So I was I had had the surgery when the movie came out. So I didn't get to see it until a couple months later. So it was, for me, a lot of anticipation. I had all the action figures. I was really excited for the characters. So I had a little bit more of that childhood awe So putting it in perspective there. Now, do I say that it's a good movie? Not at least, and especially upon revisiting this, it was hilarious. And we can get into just some of what really justifies, I think, the Rotten Tomatoes score. But I do want to say that my relationship with this movie specifically is unique in that, yeah, I remember where I was. I remember that summer. And, you know, I was just so eager for, to get back to the theater, get, post-recovery and everything. So, I know, and I love the action figures, love all that. So the hype for me was there. And I think, 11-year-old me did enjoy it quite a bit. I probably would have had a much different reaction if I was my age now seeing it for the first time. Mm-hmm. So I do have that relationship. But yeah, no, I cannot say it is a great movie by any means. I think one of the funniest things about it, rewatching, that I forgot, I mean, right off the bat, after the little music theme intro sequence, the opening scene of a superhero comic book movie is literally a business pitch where Reed Richards and Ben Grimm are trying to sell their idea to Victor Von Doom. Yes. That's how the movie opens. And this is Fantastic Four. And I'm not saying you have to jump right into a big fight and all that. But, this is an origin story. But if I were doing this movie right off the bat, I would change it to start off at least with, an image of the solar flare and the accident in space, and then cut back to, say 3 days earlier and get started here. But it starts off on such a boring note. I was like, wow.
The only reason why I could think that is because they thought maybe that if we started on the solar flare and stuff, the non-comic book people would be confused because they try to give us something more relatable. So,
and I do get that. It was just when I was watching it last night, I was like, wow, right off the bat. But no, and before we talk about more, let's introduce it a little bit more. So again, this is the 2005 Fantastic Four movie directed by Tim Story. That covers the origins of Marvel's first family. It was the first big budget Fantastic Four movie. There was the Roger Corman produced one in the 90s that was famously never released, even though I so wish we could get that version. And since then, there have been two other Fantastic Four movies. There was the sequel to this one in 2007 called Rise of the Silver Surfer, which, funny enough, okay, so when Evan and I were looking at movies to pick, I immediately thought of Fantastic Four because I was like, ooh, this would be perfect timing with the MCU movie coming out. But I picked Fantastic Four 2 first because I was like, surely this one has a worse Rotten Tomatoes score. Dude, it has a better one. It has a 37%. And this one has just under 30. I'm not saying either movie is good, but I would hands down say that 2 is infinitely worse. And that movie, the Reed and Sue wedding takes about 30 minutes. Galactus is a giant cloud. I mean, mm-hmm. that movie is terrible. The only saving grace is that Silver Surfer looks good. Morpheus, right, yes. I mean, it's got some solid entries there. It also has a really funny Stan Lee cameo in Fantastic Four 2, where Stan Lee as himself is trying to get into the wedding of Reed and Sue, and they're pushing him away. And he's like, "I'm Stan Lee, I'm Stan Lee." So that was the most meta one that they've done. So that I still remember laughing at in the theater. So this one, it's pretty standard fair origin story. It is, as we were discussing right before recording, this is about as early 2000s as you can get in terms of the execution. Because you have such a visceral reaction, you want to talk a little bit about that and some of the tropes here we see that are so of the time.
Yeah, the first was the font of the credits and the title screen. It was so trying not to be Spider-Man, but still Spider-Man, that whole vibe of, and I have a comment on that, which I think is interesting because I felt like this movie suffered that it wasn't a part of something else. It was just trying to be something, and it was trying to be too much at one time. Maybe if it made a reference to something else, it would have been better. But the whole Palm Pilots and the Porsches and the whole Johnny Storm and his jockey extreme sports kind of vibe was so 2000s, so 2005s, and just just that, and then the focus on the relationship of Sue Storm with Mr. Fantastic and all that drama was so superficial, and the whole she's invisible but she's in her underwear trope, I'm like, that's why she's Jessica Alba. It's like,
dude. And one of the things I thought about too was, I'm okay when you make a real, like, one really tongue-in-cheek reference to a superhero name before they become a superhero. So, like, for instance, like in the Flash pilot, you know, they make a bunch of like running references before Barry gets his power, stuff like that. You're allowed like one of those. It's fine. Man, do they hammer it in here? Okay, in the opening scene when they're doing back to the business pitch meeting when Reed and Ben are trying to get funding for their space mission from Victor Von Doom. Doom literally says to Reed, like, all Reed Richards always stretching for the stars, like always stretching for something. And then but okay, you can get away with that once. No, they do that for every character.
Johnny,
he's always a hothead. So like Sue, right before she first gets her powers and starts turning invisible, she's like, it's like you don't even see me. I was just like, oh that, my gosh, like that, what was
the one that I was just like, okay, that was just ridiculous. In the middle of the whole chaos on the bridge and them finding their powers and everything, they say the Fantastic line. They say, oh, that's Fantastic. Yes. I'm like, that was the most cheesiest moment you could ever choose to put that line in. I was like, what?
It's like the writer's room, they were trying to make it cringy. Like I think they knew they weren't clever. They were just like, this is going to be that we know we're not making Spider-Man here. Let's just have some fun here. I don't know.
Two things about this film. I was trying to think back to when I was watching it, because we didn't really have the internet like it was today.
It was like, you had to actually go on like I remember certain websites I would go to, but it was pre-social media. It was like I said, my first.
It was only social media. Yeah.
It was right. Social media. The first thing I saw about this movie was on a magazine in a doctor's waiting room.
Yes.
And it was on there, like, you know, there so it was things go. Like, yeah, it was things like that.
That whole vibe was so different than it is today. Because today we see some ads on Facebook or we see people commenting about it. But back then, like, you had to go through the channels. You really did have to be involved in the scene. And I was listening to podcasts back then, but they weren't the same. It wasn't the same. Yeah. Yeah.
No, and it was a total, geek culture was so different like that. Yeah.
But that being said, I knew that this movie was bad. Going into it, so I thought that was interesting from that point of view, because it's so different now that it was a taste of what was to come, basically.
Very much so. Yeah.
And I wonder how much of it was that this was 2005. We were like post 9/11, and that whole cynicism.
Yes.
Hadn't hit yet, or maybe it had. I'm not sure. So
it was in that kind of, it's interesting, like looking at a lot of like particular superhero movies, like, you know, I think it was still a stretch of like, okay, once it got to like Avengers and several others, so that, like, you know, in the 2010s, it was so many of those were very much hammering on a post 9/11 world of like, you know, buildings exploding, everyone, all that. This one has like very minimal that, like, it's still, yeah, you know, I mean, obviously Fantastic Four is set in New York. It's still, you know, like a lot of the Marvel DC characters are, well, not DC, but still DC's heavily inspired by New York, but Marvel very much, you know, a lot of their characters are New York residents. And so this has like an element of that, but yeah, there's not like, you know, buildings exploding and stuff like that. And major crime, like that was the thing about this one is, I think with the melodrama of the family and then with the Doom relationship, the actual like conflict is pretty self-contained. Like Doom here is not out to like conquer the world. He has a beef with like these four characters. And so the conflict, the battle at the end is pretty contained. Obviously he's set up as he's going to become a bigger, badder villain, but here he's just kind of like, yeah, like you said earlier, it's very one note melodrama and one note vengeance, and like the romance is really cheap. All of those elements are really watered down. And so the final fight really isn't that, you know, amazing or climactic. It's just kind of like, okay, they like, he's trying to take them out one by one, and then they team up at the end after bickering for a while. And so, you know, it's a, but yeah, there, I mean, I think the post 9/11 cynicism, in superhero movies came a little bit later.
And that kind of affected, I think, the perception of this film, because it's very much of its time. And when I think of other movies that did great, they're not that much different than this.
Right, right.
But we were like kind of expecting something else back then. So
no, for sure, for sure. Yeah. Well, and I don't want to entirely just like dog on this movie, because like it is like, I mean, it's easy to, and it, you know, like I said, it's a low Rotten Tomato score. I can't say it doesn't deserve that. One thing I will give it credit for is A, casting as a whole, I think is pretty solid. But in particular, I love Michael Chiklis as Ben Grimm in The Thing. I think this was one of the best. I mean, I'm very excited for Ebon Moss. Was his last day. Like, I'm trying to play, but the guy from The Bear, that guy, yes. In the MCU version. But I really like Chiklis' performance here. You know, he was a veteran from The Shield and some other shows and like that back then. Yeah. And I think he does a great job as Ben. And I distinctly remember, actually, when this movie came out, seeing interviews and stuff, he was a longtime fan of the character well before the movie was announced. So he, when he first was talking with, like, Marvel and with Fox, he was like, two words, Ben Grimm. That's like, so he was dead set on the character, and I think he really commits to the performance. And what I like too is, for all the outdated effects here, and even at the time they were pretty bad, not just like, you know, oh, they like it. A lot of the fights are, you know, pretty terrible. But the question I asked at the beginning of the episode of like, should The Thing be CG or practical? You know, they do practical, you know, bodysuit here, and I think it works actually really
well.
It is
impressive. Like,
yeah.
And the fact that it shows expression, which which is shows a testament to the craft that they put behind it. Yeah.
Very much so. So I do appreciate that. I like the feel. And the other casting is pretty solid too. I always butcher his last name, but the guy who plays Reed, Ian Raffold. I'm not even gonna try to pronounce it, but like but he's solid as Reed.
Very much.
Jessica Alba, solid as Sue. Yeah. And then you have, of course, a pre-Captain America, Chris Evans as Johnny. And I think all four of them really are cast well. They get pretty terrible dialogue to work with, and that's not really their fault. But as far as, like, you know, the chemistry between them, like, I like, you know, Ben and Johnny butting heads a lot. Again, the romance, like, between Reed and Sue, you know, it's, I mean, again, it suffers from bad writing, but not necessarily from terrible performances. I think they're pretty all well cast. And same with Doom. I mean, he's made to, like, from being for one of the greatest villains in the comics to such a one-note villain is disappointing. But, you know, the guy who played him wasn't terrible either. So that's the best I could say about that. Now getting back to a negative thing about The Thing. Oh my gosh. Okay. So this is such another, like, just like, you know, 2000s trope and the way they handled like the character. Okay, so when he transforms into The Thing, that scene with his wife and you know, and like he's just like in the middle of the street, and she comes out in her nightgown, all that, and she is just horrified by him and all this. Like, get away from me, get away from me. And like, okay, I get the initial shock, but man, does she suck. Like, like he's still the same person. And it's like, she just like, and when she does like drop the ring in front of him at on in the bridge scene, I was like, it looked like you act like he committed murder or something, you know, like when he was the literally one risking his life to save the crew and he was the first to be exposed to the radiation and becomes a thing. And I was like, okay, you suck. And so, Ben, I know you were in love with her, but like, yeah, she must have always been horrible. So, and but anyway, she's written.
The moment written where someone he can't pick up the ring.
Afterwards. Oh my gosh. Like, it's just like, let's hammer in on this, like, you know, the, he's the hunchback figure and like so grotesque, blah, blah, blah. But then later on in the movie, he meets a new woman who is blind and which that's I'm right. like, okay, I get the appeal there, but it's also like, okay, it's kind of forced too of like, okay, of course he has to have someone who like it's they can't see. Like, I mean, like I like the idea of being okay, someone, even someone like disabled or someone like from a marginalized community who like is more receptive to someone who has also been, you know, pushed out of society and cast aside. And like, I like that. But man, did they have to like pick a blind woman who is like, well, I can't see you, so I don't know if you're ugly.
So I don't have the same problem. It's like, what?
I was just like, good gosh, this writing is so bad. But yeah, like it was. So yeah, there's we could pick apart it endlessly. But again, there are some fun highlights too. It was, I mean, I think for a Fantastic Four movie of its era. Yeah. And like you said, definitely right off the bat, trying to mimic Spider-Man at the time, only not anywhere near as good. But particularly with like the 2000s melodrama with that intro music and the theme and the way the titles appear, all of those elements are there. And like I said, it gets across the Marvel family melodrama aspects that is central to the comic. But it's just, you know, it could be so much handled so much better. And like you said too, Johnny is so one note and such a like, you know, playboy of that era. And it's just like, you know, Chris Evans, I it looks like he had fun doing playing the role and he was cast well enough. But it's just like, oh man, he's gotta have a different girl in every scene. He's gotta be like, you know, man, this is awesome. Why are you guys trying to hide your powers? Blah blah blah. And like, I'm up, you know. And the I mean, the funniest one too, when he first flames on, he starts getting his powers, the woman he's with doesn't even freak out at all. Like, she's a nurse and she's not at all alarmed that she just saw this guy literally on fire and fly off a mountain while they're skiing. I'm like, does that not unsettle you at all? So it's all those elements that are just so cringy. So this was, you know, it was a very fun one to revisit, and it makes me really excited for the MCU version. But yeah, but I cannot say this is, I don't know, this is at all good in any by any means. I don't know, is there anything else, any other moments that stuck out to you?
There was a couple little kind of like little side comment, like things that picked up on because I was kind of hate watching almost. But was with the Thing, there was always like the sound design that they gave him was very gravelly and his motions, like everything sounded like it was flip-flops in the sand at the beach, and it just sounded silly to me. I was just like, what is that sound? Why making that sound? Choose something else. And the selection of when they use a sound and when they don't, it was very weird. Like, so I am curious to see how they do it in the new film.
Yeah.
See where they select the sound and stuff like that.
Back to the bridge scene, I was just like, okay, the way they started off, they make light of a guy about to commit suicide, and then turn it into like a joke, and you know, the Thing sees him and he's like, hey man, you think you got problems? And that's how the scene starts, and then it leads to, you know, and him trying to catch him, and then it just escalates from there. And I was like, god, you just started that with like, you know, a suicide scene and you turned that into a joke, and Oh my gosh, it's just so bad. And like you said, the underwear stuff with Sue, just reducing her to, like her looks and everything. So many cringy elements. It's just, oof. This was, like I said, 11-year-old me was very excited. And I think, I knew intuitively, oh, this movie is not anywhere near as good as Spider-Man 2 or, you know, right. Superman 78 or anything like that. But, I guess it scratched an itch for me. I was still, into the characters and stuff. But I think even at that age, I was like, yeah, this isn't that good, you know?
Yeah, and one thing that I wanted to ask was, I knew about the characters and their story, but I was surprised how much just the lack of connectivity to the Marvel Universe.
Totally.
I don't know that if it's that I'm so used to the newer Marvel films that they will connect to it or not, but did you see stuff that...
No, and that's a really good... It's a really good point, too, because, this was owned by Fox, so it was still in the X-Men universe. Mm-hmm. It was at the time where, Marvel characters were all owned by different companies. So, it was well before the MCU. Yeah. And, because, for those who don't know, like in the 90s, Marvel was on the verge of bankruptcy. And that's why they sold the rights to some of their major characters to other studios. So mm-hmm. Fox had X-Men and Fantastic Four. Sony had Spider-Man, et cetera. And so, but what's interesting, though, is even in Spider-Man, even when they didn't own the rights to all the characters, they still name drop stuff. So like in Spider-Man 2, there's a famous joke about when J. Jonah Jameson and his assistant are trying to name Doc Ock, they're like throwing out names and his assistant is like, Dr. Strange, he's like, that's pretty good, but it's Taken, so they do little winks that were fun. They couldn't, officially have the rights to a lot of the characters and set up movies, but there were still nods to let you know that they were, part of a large universe. No, this one, I could not catch any references to anything else, like other than anything in Fantastic Four universe. So like they set up Doom going back to Latveria at the end of the movie and stuff like that. But no, other than, there's not even like a hint of Galactus or Silver Surfer who we see in the next one. Right. It's very contained there. There's no talk of other superheroes or anything, which is interesting.
All right. Yeah. I was wondering about that because that felt off to me too.
Right. Right. And especially when you're so used to an MCU world, it's very weird looking at early 2000s comic book movies that just didn't have that interconnected universe. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So anyway, that is Fantastic Four 2005 for you. Again, this is a really fun series. I very much enjoy looking at B movies that some I think are much better in hindsight than they deserve. I don't know that this is one of them. I think this is, I don't know if I would give it like as low a rating. Again, I do think it's better than the second one. I will say that. I think the like Rise of the Silver Surfer, other than the depiction of Silver Surfer, I think is a terrible movie and it deserves infinitely less points just for the Galactus cloud that we all had to suffer through and be disappointed by, especially when we were sitting there in the theater. But this is by far not that, because I like I said, there are elements I like, particularly Michael Chiklis's portrayal of the Thing, some of the group dynamics, stuff like that. But overall, a terrible script, a lot of really cringy, not just one-liners, but dialogue and character dynamics and the special effects are really outdated. It does not hold up great. That said, I will end this on just to end it. Evan, even with all that said, would you like to see these characters at least have a cameo in, let's say, Secret Wars?
That would be a blast. That would be fun. Too.
Yeah, yeah.
They kind of did it already in.
They've done it in Chris Evans. Yes, yeah, exactly. So we have seen this version of Johnny. But I would love to see the others. It would be technically they're dead in that movie, but still, it's the multiverse. They can do whatever they want. Yeah. But it would be pretty funny if we saw these characters just like just to show up. It would be entertaining.
And that would be funny to see the thing, and they make a comment on the CG version compared to the practical effects suit version. That would be funny, I think.
I love it. I love it. Awesome. Well, Evan, as always, it's a pleasure doing. And just as a wrap up, if you were to bring any holiday themed snack or candy with you to the drive-in for a movie like this, what would it be for a summer
holiday
drive-in
version? Oh,
yeah.
Those like summer, little. What were you gonna say? Sorry.
Oh no! Just like summer holiday. Yeah. Like,
a summer. Like anything Well, the first thing that comes to mind is a Slurpee, so I'd have a Fantastic Four Ben Grimm flavored orange Slurpee.
Man, that's a great, because I would say icy, like that. I used to like devour those as a kid. So especially like going to summer, like gas stations and stuff, like picking up one of them, like that, man.
That's what I was thinking memories. Because I used to ride my bike to the 7-Eleven and stuff like that. So
yeah. Awesome. Sweet. Well, Evan, always a blast. Thank you so much for joining us today. And for our listeners out there, thank you so much for supporting the show. If you like, please rate and review the show on Podchaser, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. And again, check out the show notes for a playlist of this whole series so you can check out more rotten films and see whether or not they're deserving of the title. So it's a ton of fun. And remember, we are all a chosen people, a geekdom of priests.
Hey guys, Christian here to talk about our YouTube page. That's where you can go find us at youtube.com/@systematicgeekology. We have exclusive stuff there, exclusive videos where you can just hear other topics that you'll never hear on the podcast proper. These include things like comic book catch up, where we're discussing the newest comics that we're reading, Friday Night Frights, where Joe Day and I explore a cryptozoological, paranormal, ufological item of discussion. Has a lot of good fun there. I have a lot of great times with him. We have spontaneous YouTube shorts that we decided to do, a topic we wanted to discuss. They're in a very short form. We do them there as well. You can interact with us live as we're recording like a What's New episode or something like that. You have something you want to chime in? Well, how can you do it unless you head over to youtube.com/@systematicgeekology. All right, guys. See ya.
Hello, Systematic Geekology listeners. This is Kevin here. Just want to give a brief ad for some of the other podcasts in our Anazal podcast network. First of all, off is Let Nothing Move You by Christian Ashley, in which Christian goes through the Bible one chapter at a time and gives his thoughts there. There is also the Bible After Hours, which is a more progressive take on the Bible that tries to challenge the status quo with satire and looks at theology. The host uses the pseudonym The Foulmouth Preacher. And as a bonus, Joshua Knoll does the voices for this one. So definitely check that one out. And also, And We'll Laugh About That Later is the newest podcast that our own Will Rose is starting, where he will interview friends about a story they had that wasn't funny at the time, but that they laugh about now. So definitely check out these shows and subscribe to us wherever you get your pods. Thank you very much.